meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsbrick. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Now, before we begin today, I understand another of Manitoba's dwindling number of grain elevators was demolished this week.
Well, that's right. Listeners know my passion for this sort of thing, and I regret to report that a 75-year-old elevator at Austin came down on Wednesday. An irony in this case is that the elevator was 50 years newer than an elevator that still stands on the grounds of the nearby Manitoba Agricultural Museum. That one is the oldest in the province, and it's in much better condition. And I think what this demonstrates is that old wooden elevators can survive, but only with regular maintenance. Without it, well, deterioration starts quickly, and once that happens, demolition becomes almost inevitable.
So bad news to start off this episode, and equally the theme of this week's Abandoned Manitoba is concerning as well.
Yes, it's a dark topic, I'm afraid. We're looking at a trend in Manitoba that, if it continues, and I suspect it will, could spell real trouble for our heritage sector. It's not a rosy picture, but I'm going to try to explain my thinking this morning.
So what's the trend?
Well, Manitoba's heritage sector runs almost entirely on unpaid volunteers. And those volunteer numbers are shrinking. The effects of aging, burnout, and limited recruitment of new people are taking a toll. My organization, the Manitoba Historical Society, is volunteer-run, and that's the norm across the entire sector. Very few museums, archives, or historical organizations across Manitoba have permanent paid staff. And so without those volunteers, the community services these groups provide, well, they simply stop. At the MHS, our extensive website was built entirely by volunteers. Our magazine, Prairie History, is edited and produced entirely by volunteers. Our awards program, from book prizes to centennial business awards to student programming, all of them rely on volunteers. Even the basic clerical work, paying bills, managing subscriptions, answering the phone and emails, keeping the organization running day to day, done by volunteers. In short, the MHS is utterly dependent on volunteer labor, and the same is true for nearly all of the other 7 heritage organizations that receive annual provincial grants.
So why do these organizations depend so heavily on volunteers?
Well, because there simply isn't enough money to hire permanent year-round staff. After paying for the heat, the lights, the phones, and other basics, museum admission fees, for example, are rarely enough to cover salaries. You know, heritage organizations tend to rely on government grants and private fundraising, but most granting agencies want to fund programming, not core operations. And, well, that creates a dilemma. Without staff, who delivers that programming? You know, you can't have one without the other, but you only seem to get money for programming. When grants are used to hire short-term staff, well, you don't have continuity and there's no institutional memory. Even when governments do provide operational grants, they're usually for a single year and there's no guarantee of renewal next year. That makes long-term planning nearly impossible. But as challenging as things are here in Manitoba, they could be worse. We could be in Alberta.
What's happening in Alberta?
Well, a news story out of Alberta just recently reported that the Historical Society of Alberta, founded 107 years ago, it's kind of the counterpart to the MHS there, it was recently told that its $76,000 annual provincial grant was being reduced to, wait for it, zero. They got nothing this year. Meanwhile, the Alberta Genealogical Society lost its $29,000 grant as well. The Alberta situation shows how quickly government support can evaporate. Now, here in Manitoba, the MHS, well, we're dependent heavily on our provincial grant, which is, by the way, roughly one-third the size of what Alberta's society used to receive. Now, if Manitoba were to follow Alberta's lead, which I very much hope it does not, Canada's second oldest historical society. You know, people may not realize this. The MHS was founded 147 years ago. Well, if we lost our funding, we would be severely impaired. And I mean, that's a scenario I just hate to contemplate.
Critics might say that belt tightening is necessary in these tough financial times. How do you respond?
Well, to me, Alberta's decision doesn't look like belt tightening. It looks like eliminating heritage funding altogether. And what that highlights for me is the need to find alternatives to government support. Support that is stable, predictable, and well, frankly, sufficient to cover basic operations.
What would that look like?
Well, I think there are models. So here in Manitoba, we have six signature museums. They're located in Austin, the Agricultural Museum, Brandon, Gimli, Morden, Steinbeck, and there's two of them here in Winnipeg. Until recently, these museums waited anxiously each year for their operating grants from the provincial government. But a few years ago, endowment funds were created for each of them. These funds, managed by organizations like here, you know, in Winnipeg, we have the Winnipeg Foundation, and many communities now have these community foundations. They manage the funds, and as a result, the funds generate stable annual revenue that is ideally equal to or greater than what the government grants used to provide. And I think an additional benefit of these endowments is that private citizens can contribute to them and therefore help make these heritage organizations financially sustainable. And it's just not for the short term. It's forever. You know, personally, I contribute to endowments for the Manitoba Historical Society and the Manitoba Agricultural Museum because I value those organizations. I want them to survive. And I regularly challenge those who care about the future of Manitoba's heritage sector to follow my lead. Contribute to endowment funds whenever they exist.
Are there other solutions the heritage sector should consider to ensure its long-term survival?
Well, I'm sure there's lots of ideas. Whenever possible, I would say, for instance, that heritage groups should collaborate. You know, avoid wasteful duplication of services. You know, with fewer people, cooperation, in my view, becomes essential. But fundamentally, the sector will continue to rely on volunteers. I just don't see the day when every organization can have a whole cadre of paid staff. You know, they must work hard to recruit new volunteers, match them to roles that genuinely interest them. You know, you give somebody a boring job, well, no surprise, they're going to leave. And plan for succession, because long-term volunteers do eventually step back. You know, it's often said that younger generations volunteer differently than previous ones. And well, some people see that as a challenge, but I think it's also an opportunity to rethink how heritage organizations operate and how they engage people. If the new generations aren't turned on by what you're doing, well, maybe you got to change the way you're doing things. A key part of recruitment is simply raising awareness of what these organizations do. So, you know, for example, for the last few months, I've been working with representatives from each of those eight provincial heritage agencies in Manitoba to film short videos that explain their work, why it matters, and I think most importantly, how crucial government support is. You know, these videos I hope will be launched in the next couple of months, and we want them to be seen far and wide. And I hope the message that Manitobans will take from them is, you know, that there's something very substantial at stake. And if our heritage sector falters, it'll probably be for lack of financial or, perhaps more importantly, human support.
Do you find yourself like scouting the audience for the next Gordon Goldsborough, someone to take under your wing and mentor?
Well, I do occasionally get requests from people to say, oh, and I'd like to volunteer. And I meet with them. I talk with the things that we do and what they could help with. And sometimes, yeah, somebody comes along and it's like, wow, they're great. I hope they'll be around for a long, long time. But often they just find, I'm not really keen on this. I'll go somewhere else. You know, and it's heartbreaking, but I realize, you know, that's the reality we're dealing with today.
Thanks for this, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, we're going to continue this theme by looking at the enormous amount of volunteer work that exists behind the MHS database of more than 10,000 historic sites across Manitoba. Our smartphone app MHS Insight that I hope everybody has downloaded makes it easy, you know, easier than ever to learn about and visit these places. But it also means that, well, people are sending me information about sites that are missing from the app. And I would love every time I learn about something new to just drop everything and research them, but I simply don't have time. So next week, I'm going to share with our listeners what I sometimes call my to-do list. A few of the unknown buildings that people have told me about, and I'm going to share them with listeners in hopes that some of them may say, hey, I know that place. I can tell you exactly where it is. I can tell you its history. And I hope that'll help fill in the gaps.
I do like a good to-do list, Gordon.
Well, you might not like mine.
Uh-oh.
It's really long.
Thanks for this, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.